this is welcome to back to Call Me Negotiator, and today we have Philip as our guest, but I don't know how to introduce him because he is in multi areas, and I knew him as a professor and the leader of the Meta Creation Lab and Creative AI, but I also see him very often in the community based events in Vancouver. So how about let's hear his story and let Philip tell about his journey and what he's working on. Hi Philip, how are
you? Hello Charlotte, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here today. I'm an internationalist. So that means that I don't really like the world we live in with state nations. And so my trajectory is interesting because I've been in 27 different countries throughout my career. And then now I landed in Vancouver for almost two decades, and that's been my most stable situation. But I'm happy to open up on what brought me here.
Right. So why 27 countries? That's just very impressive. But like, I want to know why. You don't have to list them out because it will take some time. But why Vancouver, and how those 27 countries happen in the journey, because still very young, and that's already a lot of countries, right?
That's right. Well, you know, it all starts with your childhood and your parents, and my parents were traveling a lot, doing a lot of contracts outside of France, where I am originally from. And then eventually, let me get closer here. And eventually, I was following my parents, and that's how I got into the habit of moving a lot. I grew up in Cameroon, in Africa. I spent some time in Mauritania when I was young, and then all sorts of places in Europe, around France, with or without my family, as they were traveling sometimes too much for me to follow up. That's how it starts. You know, you follow your parents, and then you get into the habit of not really belonging to a place in particular, and therefore belonging to everywhere. All at the same time is how I feel very much, and that's why I always say I'm an internationalist, because I don't really feel attached to a country or a nation in particular. I'm more like attached to humans as I encounter them, and I find that there's only one type of human out there.
One type of human.
Yeah, I mean, we're all the same kind of monkey. You know, we're literally great apes.
Right.
And if you forget for a second about everything that is pushed forward to divide us, it turns out we are a lot more similar than we are different.
You're right. But I wanted to know that France is a great country, but then you choose to end it living in Vancouver. Why is that? Is Vancouver better, more diverse, or we're the same kind of monkey?
That's
eventually,
right.
Yeah.
But I ended up here for professional reason. And when you see the world as just a singular place instead of being different state nation, then you follow your passion and you go where the people and the circumstances are good for you. And I do research in AI, as you know, through the Meta Creation Lab. And I do creation in electronic arts. And it turns out that in France, where I come from, we have great cheese and fantastic perfume, but we don't make AI. And I bet you can't name a French software, you know? It's not what we do. The software and AI is made on the west coast of North America, Vancouver, you know, of course, the Bay Area. And then in front of us, China, Asia, and where, you know, all of the research, half of the research is really happening. And so for me, it's really strategic to be here right now. Maybe I'll go back to France. You know, the world is really small if you can afford plane tickets, you know.
Yeah, interesting. So what are the projects that you're working on right now?
So I've been interested in a number of things. The Meta Creation Lab is really looking at generative systems, and we started before it became completely crazy. I started in the early 2000s, and the lab started in 2008. And right now, what I'm working on is continuing that research and the applications of generative system in creative domain. But more importantly, I'm working on AI literacy. And I'm working on trying to help, you know, alleviate the current divide. So there's a big polarization in the artistic and cultural communities, with some people being really excited about AI, but most people being really upset and afraid and pissed. you know, and really unhappy about what's happening with stolen data and big companies trying to push the AI narrative on everyone. Mm-hmm. And so as a professor and as a practitioner in the field, I'm here to tell everyone, and that's really, I spend a lot of time doing that, that there's a diversity of AI, mm-hmm. and that the AI that people don't like is actually just one option. It's the option of the big companies of America. Mm. But there's plenty of other open source, ethical, and clean AI that people can embrace instead of being disgusted by. But they don't know about that because, you know, the media, not here, because this is an independent media, but in the main, mainstream media, the only narrative you hear is the one related to this AI that is scary.
Mm, I see. So you're trying to help people understand that using the potential or the ability of AI to create a better life and not just as being threatened by AI. Is that what you were trying to say and how you are trying to do this work for?
Yeah, that's exactly. That's a good summary of the situation. Right. Trying to raise the possibility of alternative paths to AI. Mm-hmm. People aren't happy with the idea that, you know, this AI solution that we've been sold are going to replace everyone. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we are in an economical crisis. Well, it turns out that's not necessarily the case. And then there's plenty of other options. AI is like a super powerful tool, obviously, and it's moving every day. But like any other powerful tool, think of a knife. You can use it for fantastic things, like you can make sushi with a knife, or you can hurt someone. Mm. And AI is definitely that category of, it's a powerful tool, therefore it needs to be deployed, used, and regulated by wise people. Mm. And the problem with AI is not the technology itself, is how not wise people are. And we can see a lot of people being very greedy about it, and trying to replace everyone else, and that's not flying with people.
I see. I think that is probably one of the reasons that you are so active in community building, because community is all about getting people together and support each other, find the purpose, and then work through that. And the combination or the intersection between community building and using AI to do creative thing is very interesting. Could you share with us, like, how did you make the decision or find this path? And also, how other people can learn from you to make this connection, make it meaningful by using or adapting to those tools?
Yeah, well, reaching out to the community is important, because if we stay in between experts talking about, you know, the problems that arise with AI, then we're not going to help anyone understand the nuances of this debate between, you know, pro-AI and anti-AI. Mm-hmm. And so we need to reach out to the community. And, you know, the world is made of communities, really, instead of state nation and high stakeholders. So I believe into the ground level, you know, root grassroots movements. And I think if we don't, you know, exchange at that level, then people won't adopt AI. And in Canada, we have a strong problem with AI adoption, interestingly. Mm-hmm. We are the best in the world in the G7 at AI research. The number of papers per Canadian is the highest in the world, better than the US, better than China, better than Europe. but in terms of companies using or making money with AI, we're the last of the G7. Mm. So we're really good at thinking about AI and developing it. We had great universities, SFU, UBC, you know, in Toronto as well, and in Montreal. But we failed to transfer that research and that brain power we have in Canada into actual applications. And that's a problem, and that has to do with that education piece that I was talking about.
I see. What are the opportunities if I'm just like some random person, or I'm just like very mediocre, or I consider myself normal, but I wanted to be better. I want to be like you. I wanted to work with you. I don't know how to get started, or I'm 45. I feel like I'm a little bit not in the place, in the picture. Mm-hmm. How can I get started?
Well, the most important thing is really education. It's to try to carve some time to catch up with AI, integrate it into your workflow, and get some education. Mm. At SFU and at SIAD, the School of Interactive Arts and Technology, where we work, we don't believe anymore in this idea that the university will train you for a few years, maybe 4 years, a bachelor, and then you'll be okay for the next 40 years of your life. Mm. That's not going to work. Mm. With the pace at which the technology is changing and how many, you know, people people who studied 20 years ago, there was just zero AI, right?
Mm.
And so now we're in a time where continuing education was always an idea, but really nobody really needed it. You could have an entire career without ever going back to school, right?
Well, you didn't forget that you're a university professor, right?
That's right, that's right. And so what I'm saying here is that for the first time in history, maybe continuing education becomes important, and people are going to have to go back and forth between the world and education. And so we just open for anyone. You don't have to be a SFU student.
Mm.
We have four new AI courses, and anyone in BC or anyone in Canada actually can take them, and they're online. And that's the way you can upskill yourself. And so that's what I would consider. Upskill yourself, but not necessarily by falling prey to one of the commercial actors,
right?
You know, that is selling you a product, and then all of a sudden you end up buying a lot of token and spending a lot of money on AI. No, instead, find a public institution that's going to teach you how to use open source software, how to use alternative clean AI, ethical AI, sovereign AI, AI that protects the data instead of stealing them and exploiting them. Those solutions exist, you know, and if you learn about it, then you will really integrate those tools, and that will be the super skill for tomorrow.
Oh, wow. That sounds great, because I feel like what you're trying to say is that there is a great flexibility for people who are already involved in the social different kind of works positions, but they also can get full-time professional professors at the universities to get learn these things and don't have to conduct 4 years of learning, right?
That's right. Just one class can get you a long way. And instead of trying to learn by yourself online, which sometimes works, right? But you might also not find the right content, or you might get some content where there's misinformation or where some products are being sold. If you go to the university, you have access to some of that brain power that Canada is so good for, and then you can ask all the questions regarding to your your values and how you want to use AI in your work to some PhD student and professors at the university that are usually easier to trust than someone who has, you know, a product to sell, because at the university we don't sell any products.
Wait, is that going to be like, are we going to have you to be involved in the program?
Well, I teach, and then we have teaching assistants for the labs and all that, and it's all happening online, you know, night, like evenings and weekends, so it's really flexible. So all of that is a new type of educational offering that we do at SFU to try to bridge the gap between your initial training, you know, before you enter professional life, and then the rest of your professional life.
Wow, I am already very interested, but I just got a degree from SFU, so I will trying to get some access from your network. Like, what if people who attended this or get the access to you to learn from you? From what I know, that you have so many connections in the all different kind of fields in Vancouver, and I think that is so helpful to people who've already have social experiences, have the society experiences. And I want to know what, like, from France, from somewhere like far away from Vancouver, and there's so many immigrants, and you're handling so many jobs and positions, but you are able somehow to build these connections and make your connection and resources to support those students and those programs. Could you share with us a little bit about how did you get started? What the hardships behind putting all those connections together and eventually form the program like this?
Yeah, well, you know, the connection and the network, international as it is, that's just sort of the path of my life. I was lucky to meet people in various places, and you keep in touch because they're friends and they're connections. And then it turns out that the research is international, so you're always connected as a faculty with an international research network, and there's a lot of mobility of PhD students, postdocs there, and so people are moving. And in fact, in Canada, and like in a lot of other countries, a lot of the graduate students and researchers are immigrants. Because the Canadians, because of the current system, they're busy reimbursing their debt when they're done with their degree. They're not going necessarily to grad school to the same level. And so a lot of grad students are international, but they're also good immigrants for Canada because they bring so much knowledge and expertise into the country. So that really is a bonus there. But yeah, this network is really essential. And when you join the university community as a student or as someone who just takes one class, then you get mixed with all that crowd.
Mm.
And we find it's fantastic because we had people coming back from their work, taking this AI upskilling course, being mixed with students, making new friends, maybe hiring them, or finding that, oh, actually, this young student is really more, you know, agile than me with AI. Maybe I should work with that person. And also then, it's also a way for the students to enter those networks and to meet those professionals.
Mm.
And so it's really a win-win situation when you can integrate different networks like that.
I see. What are the differences between a student and a person who have been working in the society for many years?
Well, my prediction is that increasingly there will be no difference because everyone will be working all of their life pretty much and being a student all of their life. We already see that because now students, entering students at SFU, they usually have a job and they won't really stop their job unless they really have a lot of money on the side, right? So they're already mixing work and education. And the idea of AI is going to move all the time, so you need to continue your education. So continuing education means we're going to integrate a little bit more education and work. And it's going to be a bit like a wallet where, you know, you put some credentials into your wallet, you get some courses, you get some digital badges for them. Eventually, you can go into the industry because you did, you know, web design course or some courses that have value. You get a job. A few years later, you feel you need more skills. You go back, take more courses. Maybe one day those courses add up to a bachelor. Maybe a certificate. So you go back and forth. That's the model we foresee for the future. That's sort of the vision, that instead of training one time at the beginning, you will train all the way through. There's a lot of profession in which it's already the case, where you have to train all your life, like in medicine, you know, in places where you change it, you can't fall behind. You have to train anyway. So this idea of separating the education with the workplace is sort of an artificial idea, and we have to, you know, sort of think about it a little bit differently if we want to keep up to date all of our lives.
There are so many Chinese international students here. Of course, they're not just Chinese international students, but I am Chinese. I'm from China, and I realize in Chinese communities, the international Chinese communities, and especially for people who immigrate here from China, from India, from all over the place, and also some people who wanted to come and check it out. And then they sometimes, or a lot of them, let's say, they fail to build connections. They fail to find resources. They can understand that there are so many courses, of course, but then they realize that they've already taken the courses, right? The professional ones, the degrees, the diplomas, or this continuing studies. But then very less people successfully build all those connections and turn the resources into opportunities and find their position like you. So is there anything that you can share with us if I am like that?
Absolutely. Well, you know, you have to be proactive, and networking is work in itself, and you have to put yourself to it. So if you wait for those connections, those network, maybe this job opportunity to fall onto you, then you're in the wrong world for that.
You're passive. Like, passive is no good, right?
No, not anymore. And so you have to be actively building your network. You know, you cultivate your network and you grow your connections like you do for the plants. And if you stop watering those plants, what happens?
Yeah, so we were talking about opportunities, and I was talking about this story where at Harvard University, there's a positive psychology course, and then this instructor tells this story where there's a master shifu and tell another person who has been suffering and waiting for opportunities, somebody to save them out of the tragedy. And then they said, just no one is coming, right? And then that student or whoever is listening to this master shifu said, but you can. And then the shifu said, yes, I came to tell you that no one is coming. So that really tells us that we need to be active to find opportunities, right? But then when you said that you just have to actively build it, for people who've already done it, I am a little bit, you know, maybe I have to just give a compliment to myself because I'm that one of kind of this kind of people. But I think only when I get there and have this attitude, have these actions already built within myself, I understand what does that mean. I understand how to break it down. But for people who still trying to make this transformation, they have no idea. Could you break it down or unfold the details of, like, let's say when you first time just got into Vancouver, did you feel lost?
And Vancouver is not the easiest place to network, actually. That is a fact. But independently, you know, it really, my recommendation is to do it first and think about it after. And what I mean by that is that, especially in this screen-based world we live in, where we spend a lot of time alone, a lot of screen time, and it does add a lot of consequences, plus COVID is not that far away. And so there's been this increasing isolation and loneliness. And networking is as simple as just getting out in a place where there's a lot of people and then noticing and trying to choose. Like, for example, in Vancouver, we have the Van AI meetups. There's different chapters. You know, there's every week several meetings you can attend to if you want to. Mm-hmm. Well, you just go to one, and then you will realize the room will be full of people like you. And some of them will be so much like you because they just forced themselves to go there. And then eventually you realize that everyone wants to meet people and is craving for that social connection. And from that social connection, networking just unfolds naturally. You know, you just start chatting with someone. Some people you will click, some people you won't, and that's totally okay. But then you have made that first step that puts you into the situation where you can start meeting people and actually networking. And often, people just don't make that first step. And of course, if you stay home or if you start online trying to find for an even better networking opportunity instead to go today somewhere, then, you know, you delay it and you push it away. And that's you doing that, not the world.
Well, I think that's insightful. But I have further questions, though. When I feel like lost, let's say, and I go there, I force myself, I made the first step. But then I get there, I have no idea what should I do because I'm very confused. What should I do? And then there's a full of people who also force themselves to be there. And they're confused too. So two people are confused and get together. What are we going to say?
Yeah.
What's the next step?
Yeah. Of course, and sometimes it's intimidating and not everyone, you know, has the same level of social skills. You know, I come from privilege. I get into the room about AI and I'm a professor in AI. It's going to be maybe easier for people to identify me or for me to talk to people without any fear. So, yeah, you have to fight a little bit your inner demons when you're in that situation. But the truth is if you ask someone to tell you about themselves and what they do and why they're there, which is, you know, not even involving you too much, then you'll find that most people are really interested in talking about themselves. And then often we'll return the question, which gets you to talk about yourself, and that's it. The connection is made. It really is a little bit like jumping into the water the first time when you think the water is going to be a little bit cold. You know, lots of people don't do it. But once you get out of the water and you went into the ocean, you know, on a not so warm day, you're super happy you've done it because you realize how valuable it was after the fact. But before, there's a bit of a barrier to jump through.
Okay, I heard something very technical we can adopt is that we get there, if we don't know what to talk, we let other people to talk because people love to talk about themselves. Maybe I meet person one, this person just doesn't want it to talk, then I turn to person two, and then this person B or person two is like, I just set my goal for the first time to say, I'm just going to find someone who loves to talk about him or herself to me, and then that's already a success, right?
That's right.
So after that, I guess you mentioned that maybe I felt like, I realized that I don't know what to talk, but then through those trials, then I learned the lesson about I don't know what to talk, and there's so many steps after the first step, which is to getting out, right, building public, but then I probably start to realize that I need to be clear about what I ask for people if I go there. So that's already a progress, right? So I wonder, sometimes when I go to the event and then some event is full of people who are confused and then they are trying to learn from each other and get further, and some events are full of smart people. They know so much about what they wanted to do and wanted to ask. Then it ended up that it becomes the event everybody wants to sell to each other. So, in that case, how do you deal with that situation? Is this kind of event still worth going? Or if I wanted to sell you and you wanted to sell to me, like, how am I going to make the negotiation really successful and find the opportunity for both of us?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, not everything is on you as an attendee. When you go to a social event, the matching process within a social event, some social events are much more, the crowd is diverse, and then you get people who are complementary, and therefore when they introduce each other and they start talking, they give each other plenty of things to bounce upon, and eventually what they want to sell to each other is working. You know, for example, if I go to an event where they put curators and artists together, curators want to program artists, artists want to sell work and be programmed, that's going to be a match made in heaven if they meet, right? They're going to find things. If you have only artists in the room who want to sell their work, or only curators who want to get work on the market, then it's not going to work. You need that diversity. And that's from the organizer's point of view, you know, about organizing a good event where people have a reason to be there and connect. If they're there to compete with each other and there's nothing to connect with, that's going to be a problem. So sometimes it's not on you. And it's okay to go to an event and to realize that, yeah, this is not the right event for me. Like, I'm not interested in what those guys have to say. You know, and then you move on. And that's how you find your community. At some stage, you find a community in which you feel you belong, you feel comfortable, and at the same time, it's productive, it moves, you know, in a direction that is... That